we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a clipping from the Hendon and Finchley Times, read by Peter Donaldson.
Thanks to a private finance initiative deal with the manufacturer, a new fleet of trains is slowly but surely coming into service. Northern Line General Manager Wilburn Short admitted that the new trains, originally due in 1997, are running late.
Thanks to Basil Samuels of Finchley for that. Let's meet the teams now, please. Welcome on my right, Andy Hamilton, and the journalist, critic and presenter, Stuart McConey. And on my left, Jeremy Hardy and cartoonist Steve Bell. Andy, who's finally clobbered slobber?
Apparently, there's been a war. Been going on for many weeks, and this would be the settlement, the agreement. And I'm sure we're all pleased that the fighting has stopped, with the possible exception of the arms industry. What struck me was I did rather like the tent they signed it in. Did you see that? A huge, massive tent with camouflage markings on it. And, I mean, the tent was about sort of 80 feet high, wasn't it? And I'm not an expert on camouflage, but I'm not sure that would work.
My thoughts, well, yeah, it's over. It's dragged on such a long time. It's caused untold misery and suffering. But the person at the top is still there. We've got no assurances that they'll be removed. And so only, I think, when we show that Vanessa herself won't be doing any more programmes can we really afford to relax.
Yeah. I actually agree with that. I think on that basis we should reserve the right to resume bombing.
Mm.
All the people in favour of the war, of whom I am not one, are ripping each other apart now about what won it. It just basically comes down to what you prefer, planes or tanks. And one lot of people said, no, it was because Milosevic thought that there was going to be a land war. And the others were saying, no, it's because aerial bombardment worked. And all you can be certain about these military analysts is that they've all got an unhealthy fascination with guns and uniforms. And when I watch Mark Leahy on the television, BBC's defence correspondent, I always temper my credulity with the suspicion that this is a man who spent too much of his boyhood alone reading those books in which the enemy fell with the word Aargher appearing above their head in a bubble. Because all the people who wanted a land invasion were saying, no, this is terrible, we should be fighting on the ground with swords.
Tony Blair insists Britain will hunt down those he considers war criminals. In fact, he's already asked the BBC for John Simpson's home address. 2 points to Andy. Stuart, who's been put away for a conservative estimate of about 9 months?
Ah, this, I'm sure, must be the precipitous fall from grace of Jonathan Aitken, who, in a speech that, oh, I don't know, I'm only guessing here, but I guess he probably regrets now, said, the cancer of sick and twisted journalism with the simple sword of truth and the shield of British fair play. He didn't, unfortunately, tell us about some other items in his armoury as well, like the howitzer of upper-class arrogance. And the Gatling gun of complete fibs and porkies. It's terrible for his daughter, of course, although a former cabinet minister getting a teenage girl into trouble is no great surprise. I heard a lady from the Howard League for Penal Reform, presumably not the Michael Howard League for Penal Reform, since I think Michael Howard's idea of Penal Reform was putting people who didn't take their library books back on time in a ducking stool. But she was saying that whatever we think of Jonathan Aitken, sending him to prison serves no useful social function. It won't deter people. It won't have a function of rehabilitation. But she's forgetting the valuable social function of us having a bit of a laugh.
But there is going to be a happy ending because he's found God, for those of you who haven't read. He was always a Christian, but he's now discovered he's an even more ardent Christian, and he's going to use his 9 months in prison to write a book, which is going to be called Death of a Minister, Birth of a Soul. And I think we can confidently predict that this is going to revive the British sickbag industry. And I mean, he obviously is reforming himself. He says he's very ashamed. Not quite ashamed enough to tell his creditors where he's salted all his money away. Because it says in Isaiah that you don't have to do that. I have unclean lips and four Swiss bank accounts, it says.
A newspaper article in the London Standard criticised the news quiz for being harsh on Mr. Aitken and compared his plight to that of Oscar Wilde. It's difficult to see the similarity, since it's unlikely Aitken could have come up with a title like An Ideal Husband. The nearest comparison with Oscar Wilde concerns how Mr. Aitken has managed to keep his amazingly youthful looks despite being 54 years old. The answer appears to be that he has a portrait of William Hague in the attic. Steve, now, how has Europe gained a sense of proportion?
Oh, it's to do with the elections, the great sleep fest that the state of Asia. Thinking about it just makes me want to drop off. But it's been fought, the first nationwide election to be fought under proportional representation in this country is being fought today. And
it's not a live programme, Steve.
Oh, sorry. Oh, God.
Why didn't we get polling cards this time? Hmm? I didn't get a polling card.
That's because well, you're going to waste your vote, Jim.
Because they waste all the paper on the ballot slips, which are about 3 feet long, yeah. So they didn't have enough left over for the polling cards.
Steve is gesturing the width of the ballot paper. Yeah. Very few cartoonists get to show their skills on radio.
Took me about half an hour to read that form, and then about another 2.5 hours to fold it to get it in the oven.
They've got a special stick. Did you see this? They've got a special ballot box stick, specially made for poking the folded up through the slot, mashing them down. And there was cider appearing at the bottom.
I think mine was an ordnance survey map.
So that all our listeners can remember forcing their way through the crush of humanity as they went to vote in the European elections on Thursday, 1 or 2 days ago. In the last stages of the campaign, Fionn Haig appeared wearing a necklace in the shape of a pound. Spin doctors claimed Fionn wanted to wear something which showed her husband's position, but they couldn't find a necklace in the shape of a paddleless canoe travelling up a brown creek. Jeremy, listen to this. Jeremy, why is the man who bankrolls the Tory party being brought to account?
I've got a dim recollection of it. I remember leaving the house. The rest of it's a blank now this week. I'm being whispered to. Michael Ashcroft. Okay, I knew that. Michael Ashcroft, who lives in Florida, which is the long, dangly, Clinton-like bit of America... He's been bankrolling the Tories with his money, and that's right, he's the only one they've got, isn't he? They get all their money solely from him, and they're going to make him Lord Ashcroft, because they have to, because he buys all the baseball caps and...
Isn't he also the treasurer of the Conservative Party?
Yes.
So they've only got their word for it that he's given them all that money, haven't they? He's coming into work, he's saying, I gave you $500,000 yesterday, yeah. I should get something back for that, I think.
So, 2 points to Jeremy, and the scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. And we start round two with an item seen in The Guardian.
A man accused of robbing a post office in Hereford was cleared when the jury accepted his alibi that he and his girlfriend had been shoplifting on the other side of the city.
To all of those listeners who spotted that. Andy, can you name another European campaign that ended in disappointment?
Is this about the England football team?
It is.
Basically, England played Bulgaria in a very drab 1-1 draw, a goal by Shearer. And we all thought, oh, maybe it's going to cheer up. And then Georgi Markov scored for them, who, as I remember,
That's
was
right.
poisoned by an umbrella. I was... I was very, He's made an amazing recovery. That was that.
Channel 5's television coverage was slow to pick up on that, I thought, because that struck me as well. It was. Yes. Mind you, between Bulgarian state television and Channel 5, I don't know if you noticed it, the TV presentation we were given of the game, people have come round to my house with things on camcorders from their holidays with better production values than that.
It was great. And also they had Peter Beardsley as the
expert. That's right.
And a good game to play at home next time he's on is try and count how many times he can use the phrase "to be fair" in one sentence. It was fantastic.
England manager Kevin Keegan was optimistic that things might work out for his team, but then disaster struck. The game began. On paper, England has one of the best national teams in the world, but unfortunately this match was played on grass. Stuart, whose attempt to grow genetically modified crops has gone to seed?
Ah, would this be he's a farmer, obviously. I've gone right to the heart of the story there with no. I think he's the chap who poured paraquat. Am I on the right lines? He poured paraquat over over some genetically modified crop trial because the trustees of the farm said he had to, and he was very sorry about it, and he would have preferred not to have. And I always think on this genetically modified food scare, it's always described as Frankenstein foods. Now, Frankenstein food to me sounds exciting and funny and interesting. Vegetables in my house, the only function they serve, they go in the back of the fridge, they stay there till they've rotted. Their only function is to induce in me a sense of self-loathing and worthlessness. So, if someone could knock up a courgette that could do odd jobs around the house and post letters for me, that would be fine.
Did you know paraquat started life as a fruit? It's a cross between a kumquat and a parachute.
They're always very emotional, aren't they, when they have to kill something like these farmers and that he had to take out this oil seed and drown it like kittens and stuff. And he was, why do you care about it? Because it makes you a serial killer in a sense.
I don't think he's a real farmer, because I think a real farmer would have shot all the oilseed.
Open the gate and give me a charge. Because the oilseed rape enjoys it and it's more humane.
Mr. Barker was an old friend of Prince Charles, and for 14 years he accompanied him on the legendary quorn hunt, in which teams of beagles hunt down poor helpless quorn for their valuable soya meat. Steve, your music. Steve, who has decided not to respect, even if she's told to?
Somebody who lives in Reading.
No, I said Otis Reading.
Oh, right, sorry. I know this one. I know this one. It's Princess Edward-to-be, Sophie Rice-Jones, who's going to get married later in the month. And she's promised to love, honour and obey.
Yes, that's right. Have you ever drawn Sophie Rice-Jones?
No.
Not good at nipples, are you?
I've done nipples in my time. You have to do it.
So you're very good at spotting the most ugly characteristic in somebody and then exaggerating it wildly, aren't you?
Like the fiancé, for example.
I've done Edward.
Embarrassingly, Sophie recently found herself on page 3 of The Sun, where she became the first topless royal since Marie Antoinette. Jeremy, why was watching Notting Hill this week a very moving experience?
Everyone is selling up and moving out of Notting Hill because they know that there's going to be a pilgrimage of American tourists going there, hoping to see thousands of purely white people like there are in the film. And is it Mandelson or is it Richard Curtis who wrote
the film?
The
question was about Mandelson.
Oh, right, Peter Mandelson.
Talk about Curtis too.
Has finally sacrificed his huge palatial house, which he bought with family money from his great auntie Geoffrey Robinson. Geoffrey Robinson, who is still fighting to get his money a British passport so he can enter the country. And so Mandelson is moving to a far more modest little slum somewhere.
Actually, the BBC foreign political correspondent, who now is the South African correspondent, Jeremy Vine, once told me, absolutely true, a fantastic story about Peter Mandelson, that apparently Jeremy Vine had been putting it around that Mandelson, this was in the days when this was news, was a kind of Machiavellian, sinister fixer behind the scenes, and Mandelson accosted him at a party one night and said, I do wish you'd stop saying these terrible things about me. I am just a Labour Party activist. I'm not a spin doctor or fixer or Svengali of any kind. And at that moment, his mobile phone went off, and he turned and answered it and said yes, and then turned away so that he thought Jeremy Vine couldn't hear him anymore and said, this must be suppressed.
And later that evening, Jeremy Vine was strangled to death in his bathroom.
And the scores at the end of round two are inevitably, everybody, 8 points. Andy, who thinks the locals should be asking forgiveness for their Ferraris?
Ah, this is a vicar in a posh part of the north. It can't be that posh if it's in the north. Speaking. I'm sorry, but as any Londoner knows, electricity stops at Watford. And anyway, it's...
And the bloke who clapped there when you made the joke about electricity, yeah. I've got you, mate.
Yeah, and he said that his parishioners, he said they're too materialistic, obsessed with money and Ferraris, and they don't come to his church and put any money in the collection plate.
He said that they're like pagans, these materialist people. Yeah. Which is a slight upon pagans, really, to equate them with material, especially coming from the Church of England. I mean, the Druids might have had stone circles, but they didn't have shares in GEC Marconi.
You obviously don't know Wilmslow, because everybody who's been to Wilmslow knows that people drive around in Porsches and Lamborghinis and they're stark naked and they make love to goats all the time. Yeah. the other important thing to remember is this vicar is no longer in Wilmslow. He's actually in San Francisco.
Is that right?
Wilmslow? No. Sodom? Yes.
The Reverend David Lever has condemned the residents of his former parish of Wimsey for being materialistic. It's got the highest density of Porsches and Ferraris in Britain. And with David Beckham and Posh Spice among its residents, it also boasts the highest density. Steve, the title of whose last show will be She Interviewed Fakes, but the viewers couldn't stay awake.
It's Vanessa Feltz. She was accused. They have what Vanessa Feltz's program is. It's like many of these programs. They have people who have terrible problems, like my aunt's budgie had sex with my great Dane or something like that, and they come and confess. But the people who were confessing to these terrible things or the awful personal problems, they had been hired to do it. So there was a great outcry a few months ago. So the BBC, being the sort of principal organisation it is, left it 6 months and decided to give it a boot.
I think we should say that it is common practice in broadcasting for the audience to be made up of fakes. In fact, listeners probably... No, it is. Listeners at home probably think the audience is packed tonight with News Quiz fans, whereas we know that, in fact, they're all failed porn stars. Many of whom I recognise, actually.
One BBC insider insists that Vanessa can still open the right doors at TV Centre once her 3-week training to become a commissionaire is completed. Jeremy, who served up another helping of fava beans washed down with a little Chianti?
I don't know. Who? You seem to know all the answers.
It's not really new, so this is the sequel to Silence of the Lambs, isn't it? Where Hannibal Lecter and all the people who adore the character of Hannibal Lecter, and I'm not sure I'd like to meet them, queued up in bookshops to get the sequel.
What's this got to do with fava beans? He ate persons, didn't he?
Famously, that's what Hannibal Lecter said he would eat in the film. Yeah, that's the most famous bit of the film. Which bit do you remember?
I remember the bit where Judy Garland runs out...
The book opens with a horrifying scene in which the author proves just how insane Hannibal is by describing in graphic detail how one by one he eats a box of Belgian chocolates. Scores at the end of round three are dramatically different. Andy and Stuart have 14, Jeremy and Steve lagging behind with only 10 points. Andy, listen to this. Andy, why are sharks putting the heat on the humble British cod?
Ah, now, this is a very important story because this is due to the warming of the seas around Britain. The good old British cod and plaice are moving out because they like it cold. They're down the bottom of the sea going, is it me? Unbelievable. And what's happening is they're moving out in shoals, I suppose. I was going to say droves, you know. Then you need a fish drover to drove. And what's moving in are things like hammerhead sharks. And this has got grave implications, of course, for our fish and chip industry. Because you imagine how long you'll have to wait while he wraps a hammerhead shark.
Sharks aren't that frightening anyway as fish go, I don't think. The anchovy's frightening, isn't it? You know, the anchovy's a very frightening fish. You get one of those accidentally on a pizza, they're really quite salty. It would spoil your whole visit to Pizza Express, couldn't it?
The important thing to remember about the anchovy, though, Stuart, is that it's more frightened of you than you are of it.
Stuart, who put the E in the OED?
Ah. There's a new edition of the Oxford English Dictionary. Whenever this happens, there's always a great harumphing and amusement about the new words that go in, and usually because they include newfangled words, usually like radiator and typewriter and things like that. But I believe that this time they have got things like Y2K and Viagra. Funnily enough, though, it doesn't contain the word gullible. If you get a chance to look at it, look through. Due to a mistake, they've left the word gullible out. And it also... It also, I think, has E in it. The E as in E bar gum, which is more on this thing about Northerners. And I read in one article in the thing, the Daily Telegraph that it was a Northern expression, E. But it isn't actually. I think it's Yorkshire more than Northern. I specifically think it's Yorkshire rather than Lancaster, which is my part of the world. And I think that's only fair enough that Yorkshire people should have words that they're familiar with in the dictionary, seeing as the dictionary is full from beginning to end with words they're not familiar with, such as... I meant words such as charm, generosity, self-effacement.
And round. I don't think they know
that's
that word.
That's right. Yeah. And round followed, oh, yeah, preceded by, I'll get one.
Yeah.
Compilers at the OED have proved how up-to-date they are by including the phrase e-bargum for the first time, though they haven't yet got round to other modern everyday phrases such as cripes, governor, it's a fair cop, it isn't no mistake. Lawks a mercy, I'm a good girl, I am.
You said that rather too convincingly, Sam.
Two points there. Jeremy, who was given the gift of speech by Tony Blair?
You're listening to Muttering for Beginners.
You answer. Tell them. Tell the people, Steve. Don't tell me. I don't need to know.
This is such a juicy one. This is about a poor bloke who had a terrible stutter. And he used to buy size 8 shoes, even though he was size 7, because he couldn't pronounce 7. So. And he didn't have a girlfriend, but the only time a girlfriend ever gave him her telephone number, he couldn't ring her back because her name was Michelle and he couldn't say it. He cured this by studying the speech patterns of Tony Anthony Aloysius Blair, our Prime Minister. So he had got a video out, and so he said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Hey, look, you know, 7. And so that was the way.
Unfortunately, every time he tries to order a pizza, he has to cluster bomb harmless civilians beforehand.
Has he also acquired the distinctive Tony Blair portentous pause? Because he'd be driving his relatives mad, wouldn't he? Could you Pass the tea.
Well, before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Right, well, this is from The Independent. It was sent in by Mr. David Bott of Newcastle-on-Lyme. And it says, the gaydar, a kind of electronic pager, will vibrate when another gay man wearing a similar device approaches. Its inventors claim it promises to reduce the need for cruising and prevent embarrassing encounters. But as Graham Lees wandered through a park in Reigate, Surrey, testing the device, he found himself pursued, not by gay men, but by an amorous badger.
Stuart.
Mrs. Stella Roche sent this cutting in, and she said, as you can see, I cut this out a few moons ago, as you can tell if you know the story well, but rediscovered it, and I don't suppose it matters it being a bit ancient. No, it doesn't. It's very funny indeed. The Prince of Wales has joined the Architecture Club, says The Guardian, as an ordinary member. But the Architecture Club isn't quite as ordinary as it likes to pretend. Membership is limited to 300. Half are architects and half are people.
Steve.
Well, this was sent in by John O'Byrne from Dublin. It's from the Irish Sunday Independent. Cabbie Jorgen Gilberg was well and truly had after driving a middle-aged man 1,351 miles from Denmark to Rome. The man, who was Italian, leapt from the cab in St. Peter's Square shouting that the Pope would pay his 2,700 fare and disappeared into the crowd.
Jeremy.
This was sent in by Mrs. Kay Langford, actually from a place called Bishop's Cleeve, which is a bit frightening. It says, but some of the people living in the village feared one of the big cats might escape and set up the Blockley residence against a zoo group.
Thank you all. The final scores are Jeremy and Steve, 14 points, but Andy and Stuart, this week's winners, with 18. And before we leave you, here are some instructions seen in a Finnish hotel by Mike Cottrell of Church Stretton.
If you are unable to leave your room in event of fire, expose yourself in the window.
With that, until the news quiz returns at the end of August, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy, Stuart McConey and Steve Bell. The chairman was Simon Hoggett, and the news is read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen, Tom Jameson and George Poles. And the producer was John Roth.